Welcome to Frontiers of Faith, a podcast of the Pontifical Mission Societies. I am Katie Ruwakaba, and this week we are joined by the lovely and talented Father Anthony, and also the wonderful, you may remember her from previous episodes, Maggie Murray. Say hi, guys.
Hi.
Good to be with you, Katie and Maggie.
Father Anthony's going to be with us for a good amount of time coming forward, but Maggie's actually coming in to talk to us a little bit about sort of a mysterious aspect of the church that maybe people aren't terribly comfortable with or great about, but we're going to talk a little bit today about finances. We're going into the Lenten season, and Father Anthony and I are trying to help you to come up with some great ways that you can use your Lenten prayer, fasting, and almsgiving to support the missions, to be able to view your life in the lens of Christ and his church. And so today we're going to be talking about the ever so uncomfortable almsgiving. Father Anthony, have you ever had any pushback about almsgiving before?
Well, I think, I think a lot of people, not even sure what that means anymore. But the idea of sacrificial giving, you know, I think that's something you'd have to say, giving from where it, you feel it, rather than just simply, I'm going to just skim a little off the top. And then I'll hardly even feel it. So, yeah.
Yeah. I've heard that has been described before as giving from your poverty, giving from your need as opposed to your excess.
Exactly. That's a beautiful, a very apt way to put it. Yes.
Yeah. So Maggie, do you participate in almsgiving on your own? How does that look for you as a person?
Yeah. I'm just graduated from college. So this is, I'm new kind of to the whole world of having a full-time sustainable income, I guess you could say. But I have started to kind of like incorporate it into my financial plans, I guess you could say. But I think a lot of it, especially when I was in school, had been almsgiving in more of like the participating in volunteering work or kind of like the action sense, as opposed to a lot of monetary giving of my time and resources, I guess you could say, for the church or different causes like that.
Yeah, I'm so glad that you brought that up, and I was kind of hoping to bait you into, because I know that you're very young and just getting out there on your feet right now. Oftentimes we think of almsgiving just as money, and you know, that is going to be kind of the focus of what we're talking about here, but I don't want to leave on the table the talent and time aspect of it, that, you know, we talk about almsgiving being of your time, talent, and treasure gets most of our attention. But what you're saying, that you're giving of your time and things like that, can you give us some examples of ways that people could do that?
Sure.
I think in the world, not necessarily for TPMS, just in the world.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. My version of almsgiving was, I see this job as an act of almsgiving part of itself. but not entirely, but I think part of it is like that willingness to kind of be in service of the church and give your talents to it. I think that volunteer opportunities are a great way for people to get involved as a way of giving your time and talent. I remember being in elementary school and middle school, and on Fridays every week, the school would get together and we would pack what we would call breakfast bags. And we would basically just make these like brown paper bags full of non-perishable foods and then give them to the Catholic Charities that was in downtown Cleveland. And that's probably, it's one of like the first instances that I can remember of kind of putting almsgiving into practice, which was a great exercise, I think, especially for kids, because it's something that's very easy to do. And it's so tangible that I think that people kind of, you get a real good sense of feeling good about the work that you're doing and knowing that it's actually going to help somebody when you're able to kind of physically volunteer. That's definitely one of the biggest things that I can think of.
Yeah. For younger kids, it's a really good way for them to view service to others as being the most important thing. And then as we get older and we start to have incomes and things like that, being able to hold loosely to our finances, not to be like constantly worried about what's coming next or making sure that we've squirreled enough away, but rather that we're being generous to our fellow man is important. My oldest daughter is 15. She just started her very first job at the Chick-fil-A. She's working for the Lord's Chicken.
Classic.
Classic. She got her first paycheck a couple of weeks ago, and we had to sit down and talk about how much are we putting for savings. And this would be, you know, a 10% of what it was, you know, you might want to give to the church. Well, you know, we're not Baptists, so you don't have to give exactly 10%, but like, here's a good place to start. And it was really interesting to watch her just, it didn't even seem like a question to her once she had that income there. She was like, well, yeah, obviously I got to get some of it to the church. It just became part of it. But I know that a lot of people view that sort of as buying your salvation. You know, Father Anthony, have you ever heard the argument that like this is basically just, what was it, indulgences that Martin Luther was very upset about?
Oh yeah, no. I think indulgences are an animal unto itself. You know, obviously, we do still have indulgences in the church, but obviously, we can't buy them, and you really shouldn't have been trafficking in money with them in the 16th and 15th centuries. No, I mean, you know, when Maggie and I were in Malawi about 5-6 weeks ago, 2 months ago. And we were at a beautiful mass one Sunday. And one of the things that struck me was there probably were 600-800 people at mass. And when it came time for the offertory, for the collection, rather than passing the baskets, everyone in the church came forward. Mm. And there were four boxes in front of the church. Now, there were two boxes on each side, basically. There were two sets of boxes. And they had different words on them. Of course, I never asked what the two words meant, but I was wondering what they might have meant. And, you know, the offering that comes at Mass is supposed to be for the needs of the whole church. Now, some of that is the needs of the poor, and we do that in various ways. And then the other part of it is just the physical needs of keeping the building up and all that. So it's just the hard reality of the life that we live in a world where we have to, you know, pay the rent, pay the electric bill. You know, it's just the reality of it. But of course, how the church uses these resources, the church's stewardship of them can be inspiring, and it can be scandalizing, mm-hmm. too. And the inspiring stories usually don't get reported that much. The ones that scandalize us get reported, and usually rightly so. But money is, you know, love of money is the root of all evil, as we've learned in the Pauline letters, and it's just a reality of it. So,
yeah, and I think that that's what we're hoping to do today is not focus so much on the scandal of finances, because I know a lot of people, especially after the 2018 crisis, after the 2022 crisis, they found themselves thinking, I don't want to give money to this. I don't want my money supporting this. And my pastor, I will always say great things about my pastor. I love my pastor. Father Clayton is the greatest. He often will reach out to people and say, you know, I understand your feeling about that. We have this specific need. Would you be willing to give to this specific need? And I think it's good for people to hear the good that their money does, the things that are done in the church that are wonderful. And we're often encouraging people to head over to onefamilyandmission.org to specifically support Christ Church in the missions. And so Maggie is here today to give us some of those stories, to tell us how that works, how that money is being used, where it's going. So Maggie, take it away.
Yeah, absolutely. So the Pontifical Mission Societies are a very old organization, obviously. I'm sure that's been that's been touched on before. You know, I think it's at least over 200 years old. And the structure that they have kind of built out for how giving and funding projects around the world in the missions has really been kind of a tried and true method by this point. So a lot of what we talk about, especially so when we talk about funding for the Pontifical Mission Societies, say in the context of our national office for the U.S., I think the statistic is that about the U.S. provides about 40% of the annual funding that comes from all of the TPMS offices around the world, which then goes and funds the projects that they approve every year. But the way that it works is that we have what we call the general fund, and we spend the year fundraising for this general pot of funding that we all kind of contribute to. And that's through regular donations and legacy giving and anything from like World Mission Sunday. So all of it goes kind of in this one big collection. That general fund is then reported to Rome. And every year in the late spring, I think, all of the national directors from TPMS go to Rome and they have a meeting and then they approve the projects that are going to be funded by this general collection that has been accrued over the past year. So that is kind of where our system is going. And it's all been built out so that we have a very carefully vetted process of knowing that when somebody requests that a project be funded, it goes through first to their parish priest and then to their bishop and then to the nuncio and the national office for TPMS in whichever country this is. And then that's sent up to this council, which then approves this funding and sends the money in there. So that's the kind of general idea of how it works. And we've got the four societies, and so they all fundraise for specific things. Like Missionary Childhood focuses on, you know, specifically helping children in the missions, and Society of St. Peter the Apostle focuses on helping men and women in religious orders and priests and seminarians. So between all of those, and then Propagation of the Faith is like the general, really kind of anything that would get approved by that. So like two, you know, stories that I guess I could say that of projects that we know we have funded as TPMS in the U.S. over the past year would be, one is from India. So Inez San Martin and Monsignor Harrington went to India in 2022 and, or yeah,
it was 2023. They brought me.
That's right. I'm sorry. I'm new to this. Yeah, there you go. So last year, I'm still adjusting to the new year here. They visited a couple of parish sites that had been funded by TPMS. And Inez told me about one of the stories of this 50-year-old woman, I'm trying to remember her name. I have a stack of mission magazines and our annual gratitude report, which you can all read online.
Nice.
That have a collection of all of these stories from people who have been funded by TPMS or have received support from us. And so this one woman, she has three daughters, and there's this lovely story about her, you know, wanting to raise money because she had been, she was trying to basically combat child marriage within India, and she had three daughters that she wanted to prevent from being put in that situation. And so she received some funding from TPMS through her local parish to kind of ensure that she was taken care of and that her children wouldn't have to be put in that situation. But then she also at the same time turned around and wanted to raise, I think, like $13,000 for her own parish because they needed some repairs that they had. So that's like a lovely story of her not only receiving funding herself, but also participating in that act of almsgiving and fundraising for her local parish, especially when it doesn't sound like obviously that she has, you know, plentiful resources to just be kind of giving out on her own.
Yeah. And I want to jump in just for a second with that story, because I remember that particular situation. And in fact, I think a lot of our listeners or people who aren't familiar with the culture in India might be like, what do you mean save your child from child marriage? You just don't get married. It's not that simple. Like at some point, the women that we would speak to would tell us like, well, if she's over 16, she's too old. No man will take her. And then now they have this mouth that they have to feed for the rest of her life. And they don't want to view their children that way. And they want to be able to view their children in the light of love and have a sacramental marriage that's based on, you know, the love of Christ and growing together in that kind of a relationship. But the culture in India is so much against that. And like, imagine being 18 years old and being considered too old.
Yeah.
It's crazy. So when she's talking about wanting to save her child or her kids from child marriage, she means that they need to be able to simply support themselves. And coming up with, I believe this is the person who started like the whole Craft Mart thing with a whole bunch of women in her parish. And they started working together and building crafts that they could sell and things like that to be able to support themselves. And that kind of education, the ability to do those kinds of things, just it's huge. And I'm delighted that you brought up one that I knew about. So
yeah, absolutely. No, yeah. So that was a lovely story. And I wish I could have been there to see it, but I'm glad that we have experts in the field who were out there talking to her. Yes. Yeah. So, I mean, that's, you know, one example. And I think that's a good kind of example of like propagation of the faith, giving to the general fund, participating in giving funds to parishes. And that can range from something like the woman's name is Ramaye, and her story, or also donating for a parish. And then the second one that I was thinking about was also from Malawi this past December. And I'm sure Father Anthony, you'll be able to talk on this too. St. John's Primary School, which is outside of Lilongwe, was a school that was entirely funded by the Missionary Childhood Association in 1960. And they still receive funding from MCA today. And that school educates over 5,000 students from 13 different villages just outside of the Lilongwe area. And we had the privilege of being able to visit and talk with these students and the teachers that were there. And it was astounding. I mean, I was walking around the school grounds and I was actually shocked that they were able to educate that many children. And they're definitely, you know, wanting for a big amount of resources, I guess you could say. There, you know, a lot of the classrooms were outside or just like in open air under kind of these structured awnings. Some of the classrooms had a lot of like really big cracks in their foundations. And so, you know, we talked to the head boy of the school, he's 14 years old, his name's Lawrence. And he was talking about how, you know, students, they go into this classroom and it may be like one of three or four covered classrooms with desks that are in the entire school, but the kids are scared to go into those classrooms because they've got these massive cracks and they never know when all of a sudden those buildings are going to collapse or if there would ever be any kind of damage that would prevent them from being able to go to classes like that. But that school is one of those examples of something that was entirely funded by children funding money for children, in the US or in other mission, you know, in other territories, and then it being sent to St. John's in Malawi and providing the infrastructure for the school, but also uniforms and school supplies and stipends for the teachers, or some of the teachers have to live on the campus because they're from, you know, far away. That was very cool to see. And it was definitely an example of like the work that TPMS is doing is great, but there is always more to be done. As always, that anybody could see probably in any mission territory.
Father Anthony, what do you think the value of a education like that in Malawi is for these kids? Like what kind of a difference does it make if they have that education versus if they don't?
I mean, I think it's literally, it's just basic literacy. And while we were in Lilongwe, we did see, I mean, it's a thriving city and there's some industry, there's some jobs in the tech sector. I would think a, you know, sort of lower level. We're not talking about like India with, and I think it would clearly enable many of these young people to open up possibilities other than subsistence farming, which is what we did see when we visited some of the outstations and other parishes, which is subsistence farming. So it really is a difference of, I wouldn't necessarily saying these kids are being propelled into the middle class, but it is giving them some more economic stability. You know, one of the things that we were there for a couple hours that morning. I remember it was a pretty hot day and, you know, that number, as Maggie is almost boggles the mind, 5,000. And I believe the number of teachers was 69 teachers. Now,
Class sizes.
They went in two sessions. There was a morning session and an afternoon session. So, you know, again, for argument's sake, say it's 2,500 at any time. Do the math. These are large classes. I lost the train of thought there, what I was going to say there. But it was, if this was not happening, if the church, the government provides a modest stipend for each of the teachers, but everything else is left up to other organizations to do this. Oh, I know. And, The population of Malawi is about maybe 15 or 18% Catholic. And somebody asked about the religious background of the kids, and they said it just mirrors generally the general area. So well less than half of the kids are Catholic. Now they are instructed in the faith and things like that, but and the school was, you know, very much a Catholic school, the iconography, imagery, prayers, all that. But it was at the service of the church and at the service of the community too. So
yeah, absolutely. When you talk about a basic literacy education, I think a lot of Americans really take that for granted, that a basic literacy education can be had basically by any, there's very, very low illiteracy rates in the United States. So when you just kind of even think about what could you do as a human being in the United States if you couldn't read or write, it may not mean that these kids are going to become billionaires or anything in Malawi, but you are talking about the ability to, even if just from a personal perspective, be able to read the Gospels, to be able to communicate with other people, to be able to start a business, even if it's just an Etsy shop, that kind of thing. Those things are not on the table until you have that level of literacy, which is being provided here. And I think it's really important when you point out that while we are serving the church, we are teaching them the faith, we are having that, you know, the iconography and those prayers there. This is here as service to all of humanity. This is, Christ didn't just call us to save our own or to serve our own, but to serve all, right, Maggie?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That's one of the things that I loved seeing, honestly, throughout the entire trip in Malawi, is that the consistent factor across every site that we visited was, this serves anybody regardless of your faith background or where you come from. And it's the truest form of like equality and no discrimination. Like, if you're sick, come into the hospital, we'll treat you. It doesn't matter, you know, what your background is.
How great is that it's Holy Childhood that funded that school, though, because that's children. Monsignor will talk often about the mite boxes that kids give and the little rice bowl type things, and that's the society that brought about that education for those kids. It starts so young, like from using your service to the church, what Maggie was talking about when she was younger, being able to do those kinds of things, to bringing in money that actually helps other children. It's mind-boggling.
Yeah, it's something I'm super excited about for, I think, this coming year, that, you know, we've been working with Allie Holden, who's the director for MCA at the national office, and really wanting to kind of ramp up the materials that we have to offer about MCA and, you know, the importance of children knowing about the missions and understanding what their missionary vocation is and like what that means. And then also knowing that giving to the missions can have a very direct impact on children who are the same age as them, that, you know, wouldn't be able to go to school essentially if they weren't giving that money or praying for them.
Yeah. Well, this Lent, while you're focusing on your prayer, your fasting, and your almsgiving, I know that almsgiving is the least attractive of those things. It's the one people like to talk about the least, but I want to encourage everybody to go check out onefamilymission.org. Maggie, where can they pick up a mission magazine if they need to?
Yeah.
Just to see these stories.
So links to the mission magazine are available digitally on our website. And then if you are interested in actually receiving a hard copy of Mission Magazine, you can reach out to us at contact@missio.org. We're in the early stages of rolling out the idea of letting parishes subscribe to Mission Magazine so that a parish priest can, you know, he can pay basically for the cost of production for the magazine and receive, you know, 100, 200 copies for his parish to share with the community. So if there are any priests listening and you're interested, I think it's a wonderful asset. The stories in there are phenomenal, and it's a wonderful introduction into what the church's missions are doing around the world.
Yeah. And just for me, the mission church has always been just the purest form of the gospel lived out for the people, where you can most easily see Christ moving in them. So I would really encourage you guys to go and check that out. Father Anthony, do you have any parting words or wisdom or blessings you'd like to give us before we go?
I just think that, as Maggie said so eloquently, whatever kinds of sacrifices that we may undertake during Lent. And many of us here in the U.S. are blessed to have lots of extra in our life. Whatever we're able to share with others, and maybe if we can push to give from our need rather than our excess, literally will keep other people alive, will bring them into fullness of life. And then because of the way the Lord works, it will bring life to us too. So as you know, as we prepare to get closer to Lent now, may we be open to the many promptings of the Spirit so that these 40 days ahead of us will be a period of reconversion to us, so we can meet the risen Christ with hearts and minds renewed. Amen.
Thank you guys for joining us this week. Have a blessed Lent, first Sunday in Lent coming up, and we're praying for you guys. Have a great week.
Frontiers of Faith is a podcast of the Pontifical Mission Societies, produced by Katie Ruvalcaba. Theme music by Ethan Stevie. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at @faith_frontiers and at Frontiers of Faith on Facebook and Instagram. To support the work of the Pontifical Mission Societies, please go to onefamilyinmission.org to donate.